Hi, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned in to my weekly Wellness Update podcast, where I will bring you the health news that you can, of course, use, and I will answer your questions. This week, of course, is Women's National Health Week, and that's terrific. It's very important to understand how estrogen, how female hormones work. I'll be talking a little bit about that today in the context of some of the news and some of the question and answers, and we'll be spending a lot of time this month on that topic in general. But it's always important to know what the breakthroughs are and how what is being discovered can be so helpful for so many women. I mean, most women, of course, are used to the garden variety advice of eating a lower-fat diet and exercising and not smoking and not drinking too much. And these things are supposed to be about all you need to do in order to protect yourself from various female cancers. And that's just simply not good enough. We need more information than that. There are many things that can be done. We'll touch on some of those today and some of those next week. But it's, the women are so important to our society. Obviously, that's the case. We just wouldn't all be here if it wasn't for our moms. No doubt about that. All right, well, let's get into the news here, and we'll start with topic number one, which is an interesting story out on thyroid cancer mysteriously on the rise. 6.5% yearly jump in thyroid cancer is baffling the scientists. They don't seem to understand. Of course, they won't ever find a single smoking gun. But and that's because there are so many factors that can adversely influence the thyroid. The thyroid is sensitive to toxins, probably more sensitive than almost any other organ in the body, very sensitive to chemical exposure, must have superior antioxidant function in order to just do its routine chores. And so when antioxidants run low, it is one of the first glands that gets inflamed and one of the first to suffer. Also, the lack of iodine and the competition with fluoride and chlorine, obviously, very similar molecular weights, but perchlorate is the nasty one. Perchlorate, of course, is the rocket fuel ignition waste product that contaminates a lot of the groundwater where food is grown. It is a pervasive problem in our food supply. Even if you don't live in one of these areas, you most likely eat food grown in one of these areas. And so it is, for example, in breast milk from women across the country. They were found to have high levels of perchlorate, which is, of course, not good for an infant. And so we have some issues here, but this issue is specifically about thyroid cancer. Perchlorate, one of the big problems. Radiation exposure, especially CT scans, another likely cause of problems. I mean, you go to the doc and you've got this problem in that body part, and they want to take a picture. They want to photograph the body. You start having these CT scans done too often. The thyroid's very sensitive to radiation. So, you know, it's one of these things where you need to protect your thyroid gland. That means adequate antioxidants on board always and adequate iodine, probably the chief antioxidant that protects against radiation, as well as being a key player in the antioxidant system, is our alpha lipoic acid. And iodine adequacy is needed so that iodine look-alike chemicals like perchlorate and chlorine and fluoride do not bind to your thyroid gland. So thyroid cancer on the rise. All the other cancers are going down. They're certainly not skyrocketing like thyroid. Okay, next news story. Dietary fat helps you remember. Well, imagine that. Dietary fat, the evil dietary fat, actually helps your memory. Oleic acid, which is an omega-9 oil, when it's consumed, triggers the release in your small intestine of a compound called oleoethanolamide, OEA for short. And this OEA has a function, and it helps you to feel full. But, interestingly, it branches off and helps you to form memories of pleasure, especially associated with emotions such as eating. Well, it's not hard to imagine that this mechanism has been hijacked by those who are now addicted to fatty foods and can't stop eating them and thus eat too many of them. But it's always interesting to go back in time and wonder, well, why would this be the case? Why would you have a mechanism that caused fat intake to be linked to memory formation and even pleasure? Well, the answer is not that hard to figure out. High fat foods during evolution were a prize. They were obviously of extremely high nutritional value. That's right, extremely high nutritional value. Don't tell a caveman or a cavewoman that fat is bad for you. They would do almost anything to get fat. They would hunt woolly mammoth, risking their lives to get fat, when they could have hunted high-protein, low-fat rabbits all day long till they were blue in the face. Well, they didn't do that. They went after the woolly mammoth burgers. So we know that fat is associated with high-energy nutrition, makes you feel full, very associated with survival. Only in modern days is fat considered evil. In most of evolution, fat is considered of such a high priority that you actually made memories of the places where you found it so that you could remember to go back there and find some more of it. Interesting. Well, you know, it's always been interesting to me, too, that individuals eating really low-fat diets invariably start having memory problems. I've always observed that. Oh, my memory, you know, you find anyone eating low or no fat for any length of time, they don't remember a lot of stuff. So it's kind of an interesting observation. Of course, on the leptin diet, you're allowed to eat fat in moderation as part of your healthy diet, as well you should. Next news story, how flu can disable your antibacterial defense system. This is interesting because it shows that a severe viral flu can actually send out messages or have an effect on your frontline immune troops so that they do not see other problems. This is now a proven fact. And it was especially found that in cases of pneumonia, the more severe the flu or the pneumonia, the more severe it was, the more it had a significant longer-term effect on knocking out perception by your immune system soldiers. In other words, technically they found that it disrupted something called toll-like receptors. Toll-like receptors are signaling systems that sit on the cell membranes of these soldiers, and it is required that they receive communication. It's how they sort of, it's the language, it's part of the language system they use to identify problems. Well, as it turns out, these severe infections disrupt the function of toll-like receptors, and now they can't see other problems. The scientists also believe this is why many people who get the flu actually die from a secondary bacterial infection, which is actually quite common. So the bottom line here is that issues like Candida albicans are known to disrupt toll-like receptors as well as the flu. And if you have digestive problems, I've been harping on this issue here in the last couple of weeks, but if you have digestive problems, your immune system's front line has always been trying to deal with them. It hasn't successfully done it. Well, now you're more at risk for any kind of a problem. And then if you do get a flu on top of it, now you're more at risk for further other problems. So very important to get your digestion straightened out here. The swine flu thing is not over. I mean, it's not as largely portrayed in the media, even though it is rapidly expanding and going around anywhere. And it would just be, even now, a simple matter of mutation for it to become more virulent. And it may not do that. We don't really know. The public health people are now warning that, well, maybe it will be back next year in a more virulent form. I mean, this fall, next flu season. We just don't know. But even if that's the case, that's good news for lots of listeners out there, because it gives you some more time to take steps, the kind of steps I've been talking about here in the last couple of weeks, to actually strengthen your body so that you are more prepared should this problem take root. Okay, Friendly Flora reduces abdominal obesity following pregnancy. Fascinating study here where women were given probiotics, lactobacillus and bifidus bacteria, during and following pregnancy. And afterwards, it was found that 25% of the women who received the probiotic Friendly Flora actually had less body fat. Less body fat. So, and especially was shrinking of their stomach, less abdominal fat. Well, what does acidophilus have to do with abdominal fat? Well, again, here we're dealing with digestive balance. And when the digestive system is in a state of balance, the waste products, the metabolic byproducts of the zillions of cells that are not you, that live in your digestive tract, produce more or less friendly substances instead of hostile substances. When you have indigestion, gas, bloating, et cetera, some of those metabolic waste products just simply clog metabolism, like throwing sand in the gas tank of a car. And in significant situations, such as, say, a candida overgrowth, these organisms actually communicate to your metabolism and slow it down. So you have a toxicity issue as well as an imbalance communication signaling issue. And this is one of the big breakthroughs in the last few years in science, is that we now see these foreign cells have a potential to communicate directly using human communication molecules. And that is what the new science of genes and genetics has been able to uncover. And that is a fascinating state of balance between self and non-self, and what it all means. At any rate, taking some good acidophilus has the ability to help keep the digestive system in such better condition that you gain less abdominal fat. And at least that was the case in a study of pregnant women. Sleep problems contribute to ADHD. This is not entirely surprising, since when you don't sleep well, you don't function as well the next day, and that certainly would apply to your mental capabilities. But this was a controlled study, and it did, in fact, find that sleep problems were significantly, twice as likely. Kids who have sleep problems are twice as likely to have ADHD as those without sleep problems. That's pretty significant. And this could include nightmares, snoring, as well as insomnia. Of course, taking ADHD medication, which is a stimulant, actually increased teeth grinding along with the sleep problems, so kind of aggravated the situation. And led to the warning that, hey, you know, if your child isn't focusing well in school, maybe, just maybe, they didn't get enough sleep. I remember my fifth grade teacher. You know, if you showed up in class and you weren't paying attention, the first thing she wanted to know is, did you eat breakfast? Next thing she wanted to know is, how much sleep did you get? I mean, you know, I can't even remember a time that one or the two of those wasn't the reason somebody couldn't function. Yet today we've got kids racing off to school on sugar-laden breakfasts or no breakfast and little sleep, and then you wonder why they can't focus. At any rate, coral calcium powder, great for little kids because you got to get this sleep thing going early. Otherwise, it develops into a bad habit. Of course, Relaxamag, Tri-Cal, Sleep Helper, all options. Sleep is so important. You just cannot make up for a lack of it. Did an article this week on what is the leptin diet. I know I've done a lot of talking about my five rules and that kind of thing, but it's always good to review what it is, because a lot of people, of course, don't realize it's not really a diet. It's a lifestyle. It's a way of eating. It's not some kind of fad diet that you go on and lose some weight and then you go off again. It's just a way that you're supposed to be happy eating for the rest of your life as the basic strategy that you have. Of course, people are going to have a feast every now and then, or maybe diverge a little bit. That's human nature, and a certain amount of pleasure from food is important for society and social settings and celebrations like Thanksgiving or different other events that may be important, and food is part of culture. So it's not that you're never expected to eat a little bit too much every now and then, but when you follow the leptin diet, you are paralleling survival. Leptin is a survival hormone. It exists partly to help you overcome famine, and because of that, when you don't eat in harmony with it and you try to lose weight by starving yourself or cutting back drastically or something, you induce a starvation response. And then when you start eating food, more food again, even a normal amount of food, you'll gain weight. So very, very important to understand how leptin works. and to understand. I mean, I'm asked a lot of questions all the time. Well, you know, how does your diet compare to the Atkins diet or the Zone diet? Or, you know, I mean, you name it. I mean, you've got the blood type diet. And all of these things are metabolic typing. I mean, we have so, or the glycemic index. I mean, there's, you know, diets this, diets that. There's zillions of diets out there. And they all have a principle that they are trying to expand on and turn into a diet. And my point about this is that the leptin diet, the principle that it's based on, is the most fundamental principle of survival. So it's more fundamental than anything else. And that's why it is so key. I mean, leptin controls your energy level. It controls your body's, it gives your system permission for your energy to go. It gives permission for thyroid to function. Leptin is also involved in reproduction. Leptin levels are higher in women than in men, and they must work in a friendly way with estrogen, or a woman can get in a lot of trouble. In fact, I would predict that if women just simply ate according to the leptin diet, not only would we not have as much obesity, we would have dramatically reduced cancer of female type. And for men, for prostate cancer. But that is a given. Leptin is critically important to the healthy function of blood sugar, insulin, insulin-like growth factor 1, and the way estrogen is going to behave in your body. So the leptin diet isn't just for losing weight. It's for eating in a healthy way. It's an eating lifestyle that enables hormones to work properly in your body. And that's specifically for women. Since we're talking about Women's Health Week, that includes leptin. You have more leptin. Women have more leptin than men, and that's why they have a higher percentage of body fat, and that is a survival feature in and of itself, survival of the human race. Women must have more body fat so they can feed children. And if they didn't have that, they wouldn't have the caloric energy potential to nurse a child and get that child off and on the right foot. Our race just wouldn't even go on. So leptin and estrogen, in a sense, are friends, but that relationship has to be kept in harmony too. Otherwise, it turns hostile, turns into obesity, turns into a risk for breast cancer and other female cancers. So the leptin diet is the mainstay approach for health. It parallels survival. It's intimately associated with hormones, especially reproductive hormones. I mean, leptin, when you get leptin enables the placenta to grow. Without proper leptin function, there would be no pregnancies that were sustainable. In fact, pregnancy problems like high blood pressure, meaning preeclampsia or toxemia, these things are leptin problems. They're aggravated during pregnancy. So leptin diet, critically important for the health of women. And I have a nice posting up on that. What is the leptin diet? Okay. We're going to move along now to your questions. Of course, if you have a question, you may email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com, and I will do my very best to get to your questions. First question is from Deborah. She says, I have a TSH of about 19. I do treat naturally as much as possible. However, I am struggling with this thyroid problem. I am taking Lavoxyl, 75 micrograms a day, and my joints are killing me. I take B vitamins, Q10, and a thyroid supplement. What do you suggest? Well, Deborah, you have got to understand here that if your joints are killing you, you are very, very inflamed. And this could be a side effect of the thyroid medication. In other words, even though your TSH is very high and the use of thyroid hormone is being given to try to bring it down, something else isn't working right. You have a glitch somewhere. You either have a toxin problem, you have an inflammatory problem, you have a monkey wrench in your thyroid system. So what happens when you take thyroid medication, when there's a monkey wrench in there, is a lot of times it feeds free radical production instead of metabolism. That could be contributing to your joint pains and aches. You need more antioxidants, lots of them, lots of antioxidants, lots and lots of antioxidants in this situation. I recommend something like Daily Protector. It has many different kinds of antioxidants, maybe even some Daily Balancer, which is a liver support product loaded with other antioxidants, such as Silymarin and lipoic acid. But you've got to get your antioxidant level up. critically important, and you've got to get your inflammation down. The best thyroid anti-inflammatory is quercetin. And I would take, anywhere from 1,000 milligrams up to maybe even 1,500 milligrams up three or four times a day right now. You've got to get yourself out of the aching and see if you can engage your metabolism. Of course, I like the Daily Energy Multiple Vitamin with the coenzyme B vitamins and Thyroid Helper, which is a unique antioxidant itself for the thyroid, and iodine, or ISL iodine. I think those are the key basic tools for just general thyroid. But, Deborah, you've got an antioxidant problem and an inflammation problem. You've got to address those, and you will be on your way because that TSH is up because of those monkey wrenches. All right, GL writes, 10 years ago I had a heart attack. I was 52, and I had a stent installed. My cholesterol high, and I was put on Lipitor. Today I'm taking 80 milligrams of Lipitor, which is quite a high dose, I might add. Now, 10 years later, I am more tired than usual. I've been in the hospital 2 years ago for a very low blood count due to what they said was a sliding hiatal hernia. I've been diagnosed with carpal tunnel syndrome in both hands, suffer occasionally restless leg pain, and now I have found out that I have prostate cancer. I'm having long-term low back pain, which comes and goes. Memory is spotty at times. I realize I'm getting older, but up to 10 years ago, I was never in a hospital for anything serious. I had no issue with health, never did any kind of drugs, didn't drink to excess. I led a boring life. After reading so many negative articles about Lipitor's side effects, I am considering cutting the dose from 7 days a week to 4 days and then to 3 days to see if anything changes. What's your opinion? Well, the reason I read this lengthy question is to highlight to all of the listeners the extreme danger of taking Lipitor for 10 years. It is slow, insidious, and progressively accumulating poison. It is a nerve toxin, a muscle toxin. Here we see the restless legs. We see the back pain. We see the memory problems. These are all things that are obviously caused by Lipitor. A dose of 80 milligrams a day is an extremely high dose of this drug, and it will interfere with normal nerve transmission and cause lots of problems over time. So, yes, there was an original problem here. We had a heart attack. We had something going on, and that needed to be addressed, fixed, recovered. But is 10 years of Lipitor to prevent a second heart attack worth the risk? Well, prostate cancer, prostate cancer is an interesting one because when they look at a very controlled database in Sweden and they actually look at the patient records, they find that prostate cancer is clearly associated with statin use. But when the statin magicians work their magic on the statistics and they figure out ways to do stats, of course, that water everything down. So when they do these studies, a lot of times that comes back negative on prostate cancer. That's all by design. So you got to understand here, Lipitor is anti-survival. It is an anti-energy compound. Anti-energy. Tell me one. I mean, anytime you're taking an anti-energy compound, how could it be good for health long-term? It cannot be. Anyway, that's my answer, GL. That's my opinion in terms of what you do with the dose. Well, I'm not a doctor, so you'll have to do the best you can figuring that out for yourself. I've certainly written many, many articles on cholesterol that you can find on my website. Okay, we have another Deborah here who says, I am a breast cancer survivor. Before my chemo treatments, I weighed 150 pounds. I'm 5'5". After my treatments 7 years ago, I gained 25 pounds. I've not been able to take it off. I was considering taking iodine and saw your diet and supplement plan. My cancer was estrogen-driven and HER2-new positive. It's a gene receptor that makes cancer more aggressive. Do you think your supplements are safe for me to take? Well, yes, of course, Deborah, my supplements are safe for you to take. And by all means, you absolutely must follow the leptin diet. That is critical. It is extremely, extremely important to get the weight off. The weight must come off. The reason the weight must come off is because when weight is staying put or you're gaining weight following breast cancer treatment, it means you have a problem with leptin and insulin. And when you have a problem with leptin and insulin, that fans the flames for potential further problems with cancer. No question about that. So it's an important thing. The reason for that is that insulin is very similar in structure to insulin-like growth factor 1. And when insulin-like growth factor 1 is misbehaving, it can make the wrong things grow. The only way to get insulin-like growth factor 1, which is the insulin signaling molecule, to work right is to lose weight. So you don't have to know all the technical stuff other than that you've got to get your weight off. No snacking between meals, no eating after dinner at night, 3 meals a day. Follow the leptin diet as your basics, and then use supplements as needed to help you stay on the diet and to help perk up your metabolism, and that is how to solve that problem. Okay, Rose says, please help. My dermatologist wants to put my 11-month-old daughter on immune-suppressing medication to get rid of her eczema. I am not okay with this and want to know if there are natural alternatives. Well, Rose, your little girl has got to get her immune system off on the right foot, and right now she is struggling. When you have eczema that's severe, normally you have elevated IgE antibodies in the skin. Those elevated antibodies are being punched. I mean, in other words, the skin's being punched in the nose. You're getting histamine release, and then the immune system starts to hyperreact to the problem, and the doctor wants to come along with a knockout pill for the immune system to get it to calm down. Well, you know, I can't tell you to not do or do what your doctor is suggesting. However, I will point out that it does not address the source of the problem. Sometimes the immune system can become a problem, kind of like a forest fire burning out of control. And at that point, you know, ask anybody who's got a forest fire burning, you don't mind throwing some fire retardant on trees. That's a temporary solution. It's not how you deal with a forest health or treat a forest on a regular basis. It is one of those put out the fire things. So whenever we're dealing with any medication, firefighting is an acceptable use of just about any drug under the supervision of your doctor for a very brief period of time, if that is what is needed. Now, to the nature of your question, invariably, with little children with these kind of skin problems, it is coming from their digestive tract. It's getting off on the wrong foot. The toxicity from the digestive tract is getting back into the body and then coming out on the skin. It's often getting stuck in the skin. Then the immune system starts to react to the toxicity, and that's how these problems get going. So it's very important to improve your child's digestion and get it cleared up. I use GI Soother, which is a whey-based product filter for immunoglobulins and various terrific healing compounds for the gut, and some Acidophilus Superdophilus would be a terrific choice. Those two things would be my first choice, and most of the time, after you get the digestion cleared up, these problems tend to go away. Sometimes you might need to eliminate dairy for a while, sometimes other things. You can kind of play around with the diet a little bit, but by and large, your child has just gotten off on the wrong foot. This is typical following antibiotics, and then this happens. Okay, Tyrone says, I am a 23-year-old active vegetarian. I have plenty of protein in my morning smoothie, which gives me the usual energy I need for the morning till lunchtime. I've been having outages recently. I suspect it's chemtrails. Recently, there have been heavy chemtrails here, and some of my friends are also complaining of fatigue. In your opinion, what do we do about this and when it comes to nutrition? Well, chemtrails are the theoretical idea that airplanes and their condensation trails may be more than condensation trails. They may actually be spiked with some kind of germ or chemical agent, something the government is doing for population control. Tyrone, I really absolutely have no idea if this is going on or not, and please don't anybody send me emails telling me it is, because I'm well aware of the subject. I just don't happen to know if this is an active threat and to what degree it is. I don't necessarily doubt that something could be going on here, but in terms of even knowing what would be in such a chemtrail, I have no clue. But let's assume it's a toxin or a germ of some kind. And what would you do? Well, I would protect your liver. Number one, I'd use Daily Balancer for general protection. Number two, if you might be a germ angle, I'd probably maybe take some monolaurin or some candida helper just to boost up my own natural defense. That would help generally breathing something in. If that stuff's in the system, it would help. But because it's a morning power outage, I'm assuming you're referring to, and you're saying you're getting enough energy, fastest, easiest thing to use is pantothene. Pantothene is an adrenal booster that energizes. It's, of course, good whether you have a chemtrail problem or not. And so it is one of those things that can really help you with your morning energy along with your smoothie that's helping you out, Tyrone. Okay, Sue says, my friend was diagnosed with Graves' disease after she suffered a miscarriage a few years ago. She is taking PTU for it, which is an anti-thyroid medication. She has fibroids and is having trouble conceiving. Can she use Iosol to treat the fibroids and hopefully to get pregnant? Or is this contraindicated because of the PTU medication, which is designed to block iodine binding? Any suggestions you can give would be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much. We just love your podcast. All right, so a couple of different issues here. First of all, has she spoken to her doctor about taking PTU and trying to get pregnant? That is going to be a problem. So this Graves, a lot of times when you have Graves setting in as a result of a miscarriage, you have a high inflamed thyroid gland. It's going to be bouncing back and forth between hyper and hypo to some extent. It is very, very difficult to sustain a pregnancy on an anti-thyroid medication because the thyroid's called on to work overtime. Your friend should do everything in her power to get this straightened out before getting pregnant, because you must have that working better for you during pregnancy. A little bit of iodine every now and then is probably not a problem and may help a little bit with any kind of estrogen excess problem, and fibroids fall into that category. You can't know for sure that iodine would be the full solution there, but it certainly would be something that could be used. I would stick with some anti-inflammatory nutrients like quercetin. Anyone who has a miscarriage generally is lacking progesterone. You didn't say what time of the pregnancy the miscarriage occurred, but progesterone is the most lacking nutrient here, and so I would certainly consider using the Profem cream that we have, because that is a great way to support her system. And that is what I would do. I don't have a problem with iodine, but she needs broader support, more adrenal support. Pantothene, the one I just mentioned, would be good. Progesterone, B vitamins in general should be taken anyway, but extra in her case. But I would do everything possible to straighten out the thyroid problem prior to getting pregnant or trying to get pregnant, because should she get pregnant, it's with this underlying problem, it's just difficult. Risa says, or asks, is there a supplement for thyroid nodules? Thyroid nodules, of course, are the little growths that commonly occur on thyroid. Sometimes, they're not usually malignant. Sometimes they can be, and that's how we started out the topic here with the thyroid cancers on a rise. But anytime you have abnormal proliferation of cells making nodules, you have a state of stress going on in that gland. And thyroid is very sensitive to toxins and radiation, as well as emotional stress. So every person needs to take inventory of where their weak spots have, what they are, where they've been, and what their trend has been over the last 5-10 years. And that's what you address. In other words, if your plumbing and detox systems aren't working right, you work on that. If your stress level is not well managed, you work on that. And you need to work on these things. Our basic thyroid nutrition, like thyroid helper, Iosol, iodine, of course, very good nourishment for the thyroid so it can function better in a less stressed way. But you can boost that program up with trying to look at the long-term stress trend, long-term toxicity trend, and working on these things to help. Mindy wants to know, are your whey products from raw milk or pasteurized whey? And also, how do your tocotrienols compare to delta tocotrienol from annatto beans? Well, Mindy, there is no whey product from raw milk or organic whey on the market. That is simply the nature of the market. In fact, whey protein, the product we use, is, doesn't have any growth hormone. It's from American cows that are well raised, but it is pasteurized. There's no question about that. So that's the nature of the whey. The whey that we use, of course, has extremely high quality filtration technology used, which leaves the protein molecules intact, which are critically important to your health. Also, this question about tocotrienols, the delta tocotrienol. You have, of course, tocotrienols are a form of vitamin E. Our daily Super E is primarily alpha and gamma tocotrienol. That's how the rice bran oil tocotrienol is. Delta tocotrienol is another form. It's another one of the tocotrienols, and that comes from annatto beans. I prefer the one that we use because alpha is the primary antioxidant and gamma is the primary modulator of cell cycles and cholesterol synthesis. Delta is fine to use if you want to use some. There'll be a little bit of delta in our product, but not a concentrate of it like an annatto bean product would have. But the studies, I know the people out there selling the delta, you know, make wild statements about it being superior, and it certainly is not. It doesn't have the study data that alpha and gamma have remotely. So, you know, I prefer alpha and gamma. I like it from rice bran because I can have it specially made for me where it's almost a 50-50 alpha and gamma. When you get it from palm oil, it's almost all gamma. And I like both alpha and gamma tocotrienol. Alpha is the antioxidant primary. Gamma is the modulator of cells and cholesterol. So you get benefits that way from two different angles. Betty, I've read that congestive heart failure is a primary symptom of beriberi, which is due to a lack of thiamine, vitamin B1. So to avoid taking a diuretic, which I did take for over a year and a half, I now, in addition to my B100 and other supplements, add two 100 milligram B1s. What do you think? I think B1 is a great diuretic, and theoretically it would help keep water away from a struggling heart, so it has some advantages there. And it may be useful for some people in that regard. The downside of taking extra B1, especially by itself, is it gives a lot of people very vivid dreams that are exhausting instead of refreshing for your sleep and can even give you nightmares relatively easily. So I don't use high extra B1 as a general rule. I would, of course, recommend the Cardio Helper product, which is one of the most superior fluid movement products that there is. And of course, we have the Potassium Plus now with taurine, another great cardio product that can be plugged in. And those would be my first choices for the same issue you're talking about, Betty. But I have no problem with you taking extra B1, especially if you like it. Rick says, I'm a 55-year-old male and had my thyroid removed approximately several years ago. I take Synthroid on a daily basis. What can I do to help my situation? Well, Rick, when you don't have a thyroid, obviously you don't need nutrients to make thyroid hormone, but you do need nutrients to activate thyroid hormone. So Thyroid Helper, for example, which has the selenium that converts T4 to T3, is a basic, and all the rules still apply to you, meaning that your system has got to not have thyroid monkey wrenches, whether it's toxicity or stress or inflammation. Anything you do will help. It'll help free up how thyroid behaves elsewhere in your body. So it's not just that you take a hormone, you're now normal and fixed. In fact, in many ways, you have more of a challenge taking a hormone because the hormone you're taking isn't being released in rhythms and pulses according to your body's needs. It is being forced into your system each day. And so you have less margin for error in general, and have, you know, it's not just a simple, I mean, the endocrinologist always tells me, well, you know, just take this hormone, it replaces what your thyroid gland no longer makes. Well, in one way it does, but in a lot of ways it doesn't, and we're learning now the importance of the rhythmic release of thyroid hormone on cue as part of the symphony that your body's hormones are involved in playing. So when you're injecting or swallowing a thyroid pill, you're not really playing on cue and in tune with everybody else, and so it's a little bit more of a challenge in general. All right, Brian says, so what are your thoughts and opinions on a mostly raw food vegetarian diet? It seems like the best way to go for optimal health. Well, my thoughts and opinions. That's an interesting question. In general, I like raw foods. I think fresh fruits and vegetables are a critically important point of anybody's diet. If somebody wants to focus a diet on that component, a raw food vegetarian diet, I don't have a problem with that. However, I don't think it's the best diet for optimal health. That's certainly my opinion there. I am certainly not personally a vegetarian, nor would I ever plan on being one. I find that diet doesn't give me a lot of energy. I've certainly tried it out of curiosity. Some people do feel better on a vegetarian, mostly vegetable, fresh, raw food diet. Got no problem with that. When you're not eating animal meats, you have to get iron and B12 from your dietary supplements. And this point about it being the best way to go for optimal health, that's an exaggeration. I don't have any problem with it, and it gets good things in the diet, but all this anti-protein, anti-animal stuff, those are opinions. Let me just throw out one of my key things I like to tell people when they start trying to make everybody into a vegetarian, and it's very simply that when the woolly mammoth burgers, when they became extinct from being overhunted, and that food source, the high quality protein and fat, were no longer available, the human skeleton shrunk 5 inches eating vegetables, including the size of one's brain. It is quite likely, in fact, factual, that had humans not been meat eaters, our brains would not have ever grown, and we would not ever have evolved into what we are today. So, this whole thing about meat, yes, you have to have better quality meat. I'm not in favor of low quality meat, but this whole thing that meat isn't for optimal health is absurd. Meat has got sulfur-containing proteins galore that your brain needs for optimal function. And when you don't have sulfur-containing proteins and you see generation after generation of deficient sulfur proteins, especially the lack of meats, you end up with low IQ people. Low IQ people. And I'm not saying this isn't genetic superiority, it's nutritional adequacy. Europeans, as a group and their descendants, are the most intelligent people on planet Earth because of the diet they've been able to eat, because of their economic wherewithal. Compare that to the African continent, and you have probably the lowest IQ on planet Earth. And this isn't about genes, it's about genes being expressed with adequate nutrition available during pregnancy and as a child grows. And when you don't have the sulfur-containing proteins and you don't have all the cofactors that are in meat, like coenzyme Q10 and carnitine and many other factors and tissue factors, yes, you can get these things from a vegetable diet, but you got a lot more work to do. It's not easy at all. So I'm for fresh food, good food, well-raised food in moderation. I'm not for anything in excess. I like vegetables. I like fruits. I like them raw. I like them steamed. I like them lots of different ways. But trying to make vegetarianism the model diet for planet Earth and a raw food diet, that being the model diet, there is no historical precedence that's even legitimate. It's okay if you want to do it, but it's not anything that somebody who doesn't want to do it should be thinking about doing. Last question of the day comes from Michelle. She wants to know if FemBalance is good for vaginal dryness, and if not, what do I recommend? Well, vaginal dryness can come about for several different reasons. Certainly the thinning of the vaginal wall with age. Estrogen is the key hormone that enables the vaginal area to not be dry. In fact, estriol, the friendly estrogen, is probably the best one product for that purpose. FemBalance cream, which contains estriol and progesterone, can be used topically in that area to help out. GIN Muscle Helper is a terrific product for dryness in general. because it helps make mucoproteins. Vaginally, you also need a high level of carotenes for the vaginal wall to be not dry. So extra beta carotene, you know, eat your carrots. Daily Protector, of course, has lots of natural carotenes from Dunaliolus salinus. And those would be your basic nutritional things that you can do. The other thing that will dry someone out is stress relating to nerves. So the more anxious you get, the more wound up you get, the more pain you have physically, the more nerve hyperness you experience, the more you are likely to discharge inflammatory chemicals out your nerve endings, which will not only dry out your skin, but because vaginally is so highly innervated, it dries that area out or can even cause pain. And of course, the best remedies for that would be acetyl L-carnitine and calcium AEP. And sometimes 6 to 9 calcium AEP a day, 3 to 6 acetyl L-carnitine a day will completely clear up these symptoms for lots of women. All right. Well, it's good to end this podcast on a tip for women. We've given women plenty of tips here, partly in celebration of Women's Health Week, National Women's Health Week. And for all you women out there, I'll be speaking more about the estrogen issue and how to tame it and make it friendly for yourself as the month goes along here. But we all, especially us guys, appreciate you and respect that you have given life to planet Earth. Thank you very much. Everyone have a great week, and I will be back next week with the Weekly Wellness Update podcast. And once again, if you have a question, please send it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. Have a great week.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated, copyright 2008. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.